Hello and welcome to the Socially Intoxicated Awareness Podcast. We're your hosts, Toby and Scott, and we have a guest with us today. Johnny, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey man, thank you so much for having me. My name's Johnny and I sing for a band called Pet Needs.
Welcome, Johnny. And Pet Needs. How did we get to this, Toby?
It was pretty funny, yeah. It was last week, Wednesday, I think. We'd had a concert planned for a long time with the Skinny Listers and these guys with a pre-band. And honestly, you really rocked it. And one of the things I wanted to say before we started recording is you look really different off stage than you do on stage.
Do you reckon?
Yeah,
Oh,
extremely,
cool. That's
extremely.
interesting. In what way?
You just looked so much more in the zone. Well, not that you don't look in the zone now, but you seem relaxed and just like zen right now. And then on stage, I saw your vein bulging every time you sang, essentially on the neck, and it just looked so energetic, like bursting red head.
Yeah,
You
it
know,
was. I
it was
agree with
awesome.
that. Now that you pointed out the aura, kind of your whole. Maybe it was the light. I don't know, but definitely, definitely. Anyway, thanks a lot for having us. You left an insane impression on us. One of the best pre-bands I've ever seen at a concert, I think, in my years of going, I
The
have to
best.
say.
Oh,
And
thank you.
it's, yeah, absolutely amazing. And a couple of the songs you played, I was like, oh, great. I didn't want to listen to this again. So I got your record and quickly talked to you guys after the show. Also got this awesome t-shirt. Sadly, we don't upload videos, so people won't be able to see it. But we'll have a link in the description for any merch. Yeah, and regarding the album, it just blew me away from front to cover. And I have a couple of questions about that, so we'll get into that later. A
Sure.
question I wanted to ask you to kind of start with was how the main thing that really impacted me at your show that you said, I think halfway through about, was that you had been touring full time for 2 months now, and you had been like a full time band, and this was like a kind of new to you, it seemed like it. So I wanted to ask, what's your story up until then, and how did it come to that exactly?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's weird because we were meant to be a full-time band from Christmas onwards. Basically, we all left our jobs at Christmas. Me and my brother, and then our bass player. So my brother plays lead guitar, and then our bass player and drummer all left our jobs because we were meant to be doing a big UK tour with Frank Turner. And then because of COVID, that tour got cancelled. So suddenly we were sitting there. Our bass player and our drummer could go back to work, but me and my brother couldn't. And we were like, okay, what are we going to do now? So we suddenly went from thinking we were going to be full-time musicians, we're just going to travel the world, to just being unemployed. And so what we did is that we got our acoustic guitars and we put a tour together of house shows. So there were kind
Oh.
of like little tours of kind of like 20, 30 people. And it was really, really cool. And it was like that kind of our fans kept coming together and kind of like building something between them, kind of kept us being able to pay the rent and kept us kind of on the road. And then it was only a couple of months ago where we then went on our first European tour with Frank, and then went on tour with Skinny Lister as well. And then we're booked up till kind of about April next year now. We're just kind of like on the road nonstop. I mean, I'm home now, but I'm home for kind of 4 days or something like that. And then we're kind of like just back out on the road, and that seems kind of what life is like now. But before lockdown, we were just a kind of a punk band that used to play to our friends in the local punk scene, and used to go to punk shows and watch our friends in the local punk scene. And then when lockdown hit, is when we decided to record an album because all of our gigs kind of were taken away. And we thought, what are we going to do with this time? We wanted to stay focused, we wanted to stay creative. So we decided to record our debut album called Fractured Party Music, and it got picked up by Extra Mile Recordings. And then, yeah, here we are now, kind of a year or so later, and just, yeah, we're doing it as a job now, which is weird. It's scary because you don't get a payday in the same way. Like, it's kind of like all my bills come out on the 28th of the month, and I used to get paid on the 27th of the month. That doesn't happen anymore. It's kind of, I feel very kind of rich in experiences and stuff like that now. I feel kind of very kind of, yeah, fortunate just to be able to go and tour and meet people and hang out with people like you, Scott, and merch desk and stuff like that. So yeah, that's kind of where we are now.
I would say that's living the dream on a delay by a few months, but a dream. That's awesome. That's really cool. And knowing that you're just going to be traveling until April and playing music to all kinds of people. That's an amazing story. I guess COVID kind of gave you time to at least create the album in that sense. And from that, then also grow your fan base in terms of your house shows and everything. That's really cool. Toby, do you have a follow-up question before I have a couple points written down, but I'm going to hand it over. So we.
I was just wondering, once you saw the shift then happen, you know, once COVID calmed down a bit and you were able to start touring with Frank Turner, what was the decision making like? Did you just go, well, we'll accompany you on wherever you go, or did you have goals that you specifically set out to go to? Also looking forward now, is there places that you fought for to go to, or are you just going with the flow?
It's kind of a bit of both. It was kind of because at the start, the first thing that we got offered, weirdly, was the UK tour. Before that, we did a couple of socially distanced shows outside, kind of because basically we were going to big fields where you could have maybe like 4,000 or 5,000 people in the field, but the capacity was only about 600 people were let in, and they were painting circles on the floor, and people could only go in groups of six, and they could stay in their circles on the floor. So it was really, really bizarre and kind of post-apocalyptic and weird, but still the biggest crowds we'd ever played to, ever. And then kind of things started kind of building and growing. And it was when we took on basically the person that that manages Frank and manages Skinny Lister, also manages us now. So it's kind of when we, one signed to Extra Mile Recordings, but then signed with this guy called Charlie, who owns the label, but also kind of manages them. That's when kind of doors started opening. We're having the conversations, and we played with Frank, but we also did a few dates with The Hives as well, which is brilliant. Cool. That was really cool fun. Yeah. In the UK, we did that, and that was really cool. And then, yeah, we got offered the UK shows, and then it was kind of, we thought it'd be great if we do UK and Europe, and we didn't even consider like America. And then we kind of got the offer through for Europe, which we did a couple of months ago, which is amazing. Then we got the offer through for America. So it's just kind of like built, and Frank's really looked after us, which is cool. And he's really good at championing artists. If there's someone that he really likes, then he'll throw everything behind it, which is really cool. And now we're kind of, the things that we're looking into is what are the next steps from here? Because we can't support him forever. And like, we want to see like who else we can get out with and stuff. And also how can we build things like when we're doing headline tours and stuff like that. So we're always kind of like working with our label and working with our management to push as hard as we can and work as hard as we can to get the next thing. But also everything's kind of a surprise as well. And it feels like we've kind of been really fortunate and really lucky in the way that we didn't do much touring before. So we were kind of just playing local shows. I live in a place called Colchester in Essex, which is maybe about kind of 40 minutes outside of London. And we were either kind of playing in Essex or just going to play in London. And that was it. We'd never done a full tour before. And then our first proper tour was kind of 18 dates in Europe, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then back out with Skinny Lister. And now we're going and doing 2 months in America. Leaving on Saturday, which is just nuts, man.
That summarizes it. That's something I noticed on the record. Frank Turner produced it, and also was involved with, I think, mastering it, if I read it correctly. And so he was probably in the studio with you guys. So there, as you have stated, there's probably quite a connection to him. How did you get to know him, and how did that kind of come about?
So he actually wasn't in the studio with us for this one. It was recorded by someone else, but then he mixed it and he mastered it. But then we went into the studio to record album 2, which is coming out in September. We recorded that with Frank, which I'm super excited about. But it was really weird. We played a little show in London maybe 2 years ago, I think it was as part of a festival called Camden Rocks Festival, where there's loads of venues, maybe 20 venues in Camden in London, that are all putting on gigs. And he was playing, like he was headlining the whole festival, and he was playing a big room with like thousands of people. And we were playing a kind of a really legendary venue, but just kind of like a little punk venue that kind of like held maybe 100 people. And he turned up at the show. He's like kind of like a big punk music fan. So he kind of like went to the punk stage, which we were playing on. And he turned up at the show and kind of we got chatting on the merch desk and kind of kept in contact a little bit through email. And then it kind of went quiet and COVID hit and all that kind of stuff. And so we kind of forgot about it. It was like a really cool thing that happened and we really loved his music and stuff. And then maybe just over a year ago, I had an email drop into our inbox and it was from Frank and it just had the title Essex, like in the title, which is where I live. And I opened it going, what is going on? This is really bizarre. And he said, oh, hi, Johnny, just to let you know that I'm moving house and I'm going to be moving to Essex. I don't know anyone in the area. If you ever want to meet up for a beer, just hit us up. And I was like, okay, this is really bizarre, but yeah, really cool. Like, sure, absolutely. And then we continued talking and he was like saying, what have you been doing in lockdown? And I said, oh, actually, like we've spent the time recording an album. And he said, that's really interesting because I've just got into like mixing and mastering and producing and stuff. And he said, a bit of a weird question, but would it be okay if I had a go at like mixing one of your tracks? So I'm kind of like trying to learn and stuff. I was like, yeah, sure. So I sent like all the stems over of the track and he mixed it brilliantly. It was a song called Sympathetic Accent Syndrome. And it was, it sounded huge. It sounded kind of like bigger than anything that we'd ever had mixed or mastered before. So I started kind of writing out a big email to him, trying to kind of put ourselves forward to let him mix kind of like maybe four of the tracks and we could do like a punk EP of that. And then we could still release the album separately. And as I was writing that email, I had an email kind of drop into my inbox of him putting himself forward to mix the whole album. And then it kind of went from there. And we had a weird lockdown where like, obviously people couldn't leave the houses or anything like that. So we couldn't get in the same room together, but it was just, us sending hundreds of emails back and forth, kind of like building this album, building the sound of it together. And then, yeah, we've kind of like finally met when like he moved to Essex and like things opened up and we were able to have a beer with him. And then we just really got on. And then, yeah, when it came to recording album two, we wanted him there right from kind of day one of doing it. And we did it last November. We spent 2 weeks in the studio with him. And it was brilliant. You can tell that he's kind of sat next to some of the best producers in the world. Like he's such a professional, so much more than like we'd ever had before. And yeah, he's amazing. So yeah, I'm really proud of the album that Fracture Party Music that is out, but I'm also so excited about album two, which is coming out in September, which is cool.
That's a really cool connection relationship how it grew. And I guess there's no title yet to be announced for the album, or is there already?
Not yet. But I think the title's been decided. It's between a couple of things, but yeah, it's dropping in September. I think the release date is like early September. I think like September the 9th or something like that. So it's coming soon.
All right. Pre-ordering it when possible. Good to know.
Nice.
Good to know. In terms of festivals, you said the Hives. We're gonna see the Hives in I think a week and a half at the Hurricane Festival.
Yeah, roughly. Right.
Near Hamburg.
So yeah, one of the bands I'm looking forward to most. Gonna be a lot of fun. I think a big party house will happen.
Oh, they were amazing. Like we played with them down in Portsmouth, and then we played with them at Rock City in Nottingham as well. Which I grew up in Derby, which is just next to Nottingham, and Rock City is kind of the venue that I've seen so many bands there, and it was just amazing to grace that stage. But then also seeing the Hives, I learned so much about how to front a band and how to interact with an audience and stuff, because they're just incredible, and they're kind of they have kind of a lot of humor to their performance, but in a way where it's not like a comedy performance or anything like that, but I think they're just so enthusiastic about what they do, and they just walk out and they just go like, you are watching the greatest rock and roll band in the world. And like, it's just because you can kind of tell that they're kind of half joking about it and stuff, but they're just so like passionate about it. And also the nicest people in the world, and they love to party up after the show, which is which is lots of fun.
Always fun. Agreed. I only want to ask about two songs on the album, really. My favorite album, my favorite song on the album is As the Spin Cycle Span. It's one of the funniest songs. Honestly, the biggest banger, I think, is Tracy Emin's Bed. That's a banger riff, banger song. There's a part in it that reminds me of Joy Division to a degree. I think it's bridge, slower part. I don't know if that is maybe on purpose, but it seemed like it, at least to me, or like an 80s throwback. But the story and As the Spin Cycle Span is just hilarious. And it's different on the record as you performed live. I think it was different, but on the record, I love the tone. It's so basic, and the way the story is sung over the music, it's a completely different melody. I love that song, and it sounds almost like a similar, if the story you told on stage is true. I think you said it was a guy came over to fix your washing machine, and it was kind of the dialogue you had, or the conversation. Similar to Where Money for Nothing from Dire Straits came from, because he was just working at a electronics shop, and so it reminded me of that song, actually, just from that little like backstory. And that was just customers talking. I wanted to learn a new vocabulary today. What is Pavlovian? What does that mean?
Okay, cool.
That's my final question. So comments to the other two, but.
So it's this thing called Pavlovian conditioning. So before, before I did music and stuff like that, before I worked, I did a psychology degree. And one of the first things that you learn is about Pavlovian conditioning. And there's this guy called Pavlov, and he had these dogs, and every time he brought food out, he'd ring a little bell, and the dogs would see the food and they'd start salivating because the food was there and stuff like that. And it got to the point where, because of this thing called Pavlovian conditioning, every time he rang the bell, even if he didn't bring the food out, the dogs would start salivating. And so it's kind of just, it's a bit of a play on that. But I was watching video. It's weird because I find the lyrics to that song quite funny now, but it was a bit of a time where I was struggling a little bit with kind of anxiety and stuff like that. I used to put on events at work at a university. And it'd be like the week that I was putting on this big event, and I was kind of really stressed with it and stuff. And I was watching these videos on YouTube of kind of powerfully aggressive American people going, "You're in charge of your own destiny. You can do all this, that, all this kind of stuff." And at the same time, I was seeing kind of like targeted adverts round around the YouTube video for things kind of based on my search history and stuff like that. And I found it quite interesting how I was being shouted at, basically being told that I'm in charge of my own destiny and I can do anything I want and I'm in charge, whilst I was having kind of adverts targeted at me at the same time. And it kind of reminded me a little bit about that kind of when Pavlov used to ring that bell and make the dogs kind of salivate. It's weird, a bit geeky.
So to this day, you still think anytime someone tells you that you can do whatever you're setting out to do, you can fulfill your dreams, you think, you know what, I should buy some 26 roll of toilet paper off of Amazon.
That's exactly it.
That is the gist of any kind of internet marketing nowadays. Toby, I'll hand it over to you if you have a comment.
I just want to say I really like Scratch Card. Great, great vibe to that song. I just really enjoy it.
Nice. Thank you.
I'm not nearly as musically inclined as Scott is, but all I can tell you is that I really enjoy that song and that I find it very funny and that I find it very entertaining.
Yeah, that's I really like the that both of you have said that you find the songs funny as well, because I really like that idea of use. I find kind of like using things that are kind of comedic, not comedy per se, but things that kind of like make people laugh or a little bit sarcastic and things like that, is a really good way to communicate. And you see that in bands like kind of like the Arctic Monkeys and stuff like that. Or there's a band called Art Brut, who are one of my favorite bands in the whole entire world. And if you've not heard of them, I'd say definitely check them out. Their first album especially
is
brilliant. So yes, it's Art, A-R-T space B-R-U-T, Art Brut. Their first album opens with a song that's just it's called Formed a Band. And it was when it was their first ever single. No one knew who they were or anything like that. But if anyone listens to this podcast hasn't heard of them, listen to them straight away, because they're such a big influence on what we do as well. And I kind of like just through the internet and stuff, but I know that their singer kind of like follows what we do and stuff. And we've kind of half been talking about potentially in the future maybe doing some shows together, which would be amazing because they're one of my favorite bands in the whole entire world. Don't know if it will happen yet, but that'd be really, really cool. But yeah, with Scratch Cards, it's strange because we wrote it and we really liked it, but then we never really played it live for a while. I don't know why. I think because it wasn't a single. And when we were doing support shows, you only get half an hour, so you've got to choose kind of like really carefully what you do. And also, I was a bit resistant to playing guitar on stage as well, because I I've got two options really. I can either stand glued to a microphone like that, or I can just run around with the microphone, my arms above my head. And the second one, to me, always felt kind of more fun.
Fair enough.
So I preferred not to play guitar on stage. Obviously, that one's got a kind of acoustic rhythm guitar that keeps driving all the way through. Then I was persuaded to kind of let's give this song a go live. And it seems to be one of the ones that goes down the best now. I think it's got, especially if we're playing with a band like Skinny Lister, that are kind of like party punky folk kind of music. So yeah, it's a staple in the set now. We play it kind of every night now, and it's one of the ones that I really look forward to playing as well. So yeah, it means a lot that you like it. Thanks, man.
Just as you were talking, sorry, I know I think Scott's got something, but I've had this image that popped into my head of weirdly enough, Mr. Bean telling someone off by saying, "You look like you've never bought a scratch card before." I mean, it's such a prominent image that just popped in. Like, man never speaks, and it isn't. I mean, Rhode Atkinson can be about as posh as they come, but just that thought in my head, just a punk Mr. Bean telling someone off and telling them they've never bought a scratch card before is just that popped in. That might be some fun art.
That lyric came from basically I was trying to describe someone who just never took risks in their life at all. So it's kind of, and I wrote loads of stuff down, like kind of like you look like you'd have the mildest curry if you went out for an Indian or something like that, and all those kind of things where people just would never take any risks, like, because it's the kind of premise of the song is kind of trying to get someone to hang out with you on a Saturday, but what they want to do is just kind of like sit in and watch Saturday Night Telly or something like that. Whereas why it's saying kind of your Saturday looks saccharine, just sack it in, let's do something together. And then I had loads of different kind of things that I just kept writing down as making myself laugh. But then yeah, the one that kind of stuck out and the one that kind of stayed with me was you look like you never bought a scratch card. I quite like that. Yeah. I kind of like distilled down everything that I wanted to say about the person that was kind of sitting inside watching telly on a beautiful day when I wanted them to hang out with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It fits. And back to the playing it live, I think it also works especially well because the rest of the show, you're on your feet and you're really active with the mic above your head. So I think it's a very good kind of best of both worlds that people get to see both sides of it. And to the point of how you describe the Hives stage presence, I do think you emulate a lot of that because you're also passionately humorous in your in your whole approach. One of the things that stuck with me that I really enjoyed seeing for some reason in that moment was you dancing and twisting the microphone around your body, and like you wrapped the whole thing around and we're just grooving, and it was something for some reason like engaged me, I don't know, and everybody felt like it was interesting. And yet it was like, don't take yourself too seriously, but be passionate about it. So it's a good message. I think that song emulates that as well.
You've got to be careful, Scott. If you give Johnny any more compliments, he'll go out and buy some toilet rolls.
Fair enough. I'll stop. Toby, anything else from your side? I have a bunch more.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I was interrupting you earlier, so go ahead.
No, that was my comment initially. But
gotcha.
In terms of other topics, I asked you guys this last when we met at the merch stand, and I heard a couple of different influences out of you. You mentioned Art Brut, which I guess definitely is up there, being one of your favorite bands of all time. But what have been some of your other influences along the way?
So I'm really, the band that kind of like influenced me to set up the band completely is a band called Against Me. So an American punk band who I absolutely love. And I was, before I was kind of playing acoustic music, and I had a backing band playing acoustic music, and ended up getting booked for these kind of posh like folk festivals and stuff like that, where I was by far the kind of loudest person on the bill, but then everything else is all so kind of safe and a little bit boring. I mean, everything was very good, but it wasn't really my kind of music. And then Against Me, I've got a lyric that says, "We can be the bands that we want to hear." And I remember hearing that and just being like, I don't know what I'm doing kind of like twee kind of acoustic music. I want to be in a punk band. I used to be in a punk band before, and I want to again. And so they were the bands that just absolutely kind of just influenced me to just start it and start doing it and start kind of like doing it in this way. And now it's really like Laura Jane Grace. She's the singer of Against Me, and she's on our record label. And is a fan of the band as well, which is really cool. I've had an email from her saying that she's a big fan of what we do, which is really cool. And then Art Brut, a really big influence. But then I really like words. So I really like kind of lyricists as well. So like one of my favorite, like I don't think you'd ever hear it, unless I kind of told you. But like one of my favorite influences are a band called The Streets. And this guy called Mike Skinner that kind of like it's his project. And it's almost like over garage music, but he has a way of telling stories a little bit like kind of as a Spin Cycles band story, where he'll describe something and you're just in that moment. You're just there. But then I also love kind of old punk music as well. So stuff like kind of like The Clash and X-Ray Specs and Sex Pistols and stuff, which is like, that's the kind of stuff that I grew up on. So my dad was into that as well. Loads of different stuff really, and then some stuff a bit more on the indie side as well. So when I was younger, I used to listen a lot to bands like The Cribs and Franz Ferdinand and stuff like that as well, which has kind of creeped in.
Amazing. I remember after the show I had thrown a couple names at you just in terms of some of the sound, and the reason why Toby and I are so like immediate fanboys, because like we generally like this type of music, and there was like elements of I thought at least Wombat style music in there.
Cool.
Arctic Monkeys as well. Jamie T I heard out as well. We used to listen to Jamie T a lot in the car, so it just brings up all these good vibes. So like those were other bands that you hadn't mentioned now. So I guess maybe it's just like coincidence that it sounds the same, or like something along those lines. It's but
not coincidence with Jamie T, definitely. Like Jamie T is one of my favorite, and he's got a new album coming out, which I'm so excited about.
Good.
He's were asking earlier, are there things that we're pushing for with the band and stuff? The one thing that we're working with our management for and stuff at the moment. Oh, I need to tell you another band that one of my favorite bands as well. But is I keep saying, like, if the opportunity comes up at all, if we can tour with Jamie T, that would be the best. Like, I don't know if it will happen or yet, not yet, but that'd be amazing. But another band as well, which is one of the biggest influences on us, kind of music wise, is a band called Pop. Who are kind of like a Canadian punk band.
I love them so much. Amazing. That's amazing. I love the Canadian Toronto like punk scene. It's insane.
Yeah.
Pup is a great band. Absolute recommendation.
It's amazing.
Okay, cool. Do you know the Dirty Nil by chance?
I don't. What, the Dirty Nil, did you
the
say?
The Dirty Nil. They're from the same, like, area. And
cool.
The
I'll
Dirty Nil,
out.
They toured with Billy Talent through Germany. And Billy Talent cool. is, like, my favorite band. And
nice.
Yeah, they're awesome, too. They have a lot of good music. So there's a recommendation for you.
I'm cool. happy I'll check you came him out. Up
with one. Yeah, I wanted to come back one more thing to the live music I forgot to say, because again, you're a band, it's not just you, and that was really evident on the stage. And it's one thing to bring out a good album, but it's another to like play your heart out in front of a bunch of people and get the people involved. And it went, one of the things I was super fascinated by, your brother, the guitarist, he did not stop smiling. He was smiling and laughing for the entire show. And I mentioned Billy Talent is one of my favorite bands. So whenever I see them live, the guitarist Ian Zaw, he's super focused and like very concentrated, which also is cool to a degree because it's almost like angry. So it gets that going. But the happiness, it just gets you really excited and everybody's emulating it. And it's really cool from the drummer over to bassist. Everybody's just happy. And it worked really well in combination with Skinny Lister as well. Not in terms of warming up, but in terms of just starting the party early, and then it just kept going. And it was, so that's the best impression a band can leave, in my opinion, that live presence.
Oh, thank you so much.
It gets you connected.
Yeah, and I think we've never really wanted to be cool or anything like that, or wanted to be kind of, and it's fine when people want to, or if people just want to stare at their shoes and play guitar and stuff, like anyone can do whatever they want. But for us, like it's such an opportunity that we've had. But even when we were playing to kind of 30 people in our local pub, we were doing it because we loved it. And like, if we love it, we're going to be smiling, we're going to be laughing and stuff, because it's so much fun. It's so much fun. Like, I love it so much. Whether we're playing to kind of 5,000 people or 50 people, it's great. And it's about human connection. I think that for us, like we have such a good time on stage. So I'm so glad that shows, you know?
Yeah. And I think the audience has fun with you as well, which is another thing. You could just be having fun and people are like turning around, but it carries the room, and that's neat.
Yeah. And you know, another thing is I feel like you can often notice when it's insincere, you know, or when people, as you said, kind of want to be cool and go on stage to put on a performance, which is fine, you know, it's a performance in the end, but sure. Kind of that sincerity also, especially preceding Skinny Listers, was really nice, just because it gave the entire evening such a, you know, a very close connection. And then I'm pretty sure I spotted you guys in the audience at least a couple of times.
Yeah.
and seeing that was also really fun. Then as things continued, you know, and obviously Skinny Lister also came to the audience. It was, yeah, it just gave it all a very homely, very sincere feel.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. And that's one thing I think is really important for us as well, especially because we haven't really toured before in this. Well, we've started to now, but we make sure that everything we do as much as we can at the moment is as DIY as possible. So we like drive the van between us. We don't have a tour driver or anything like that. We just drive it between us. We tour manage ourselves. Like we sell our merch ourselves after we like set up the merch store. We sell our merch ourselves, and then we're out in the audience hanging out with people. Because we like, well, for two reasons, really. One, we kind of want to pay our dues because we're at a level where if we wanted a tour manager, we've been offered them and stuff like that. But we kind of feel like we want to learn how everything works from the inside before we'd even do something like that. But number two, we just like, if you're in a new city, you want to make new friends, and you're not going to make new friends if you're just sitting in the dressing room, then coming and playing, then just going straight back to the dressing room or to the hotel. And also, it's just like, if you're playing with a band that you love, and we're massive fans of Skinny Lister, then of course you're going to be out partying with them afterwards. And in Hamburg on the last night, that's when, because I don't really drink when I'm on the road because it's bad for my voice. But then on the last night, I just have all the beers that have been racked up for the last 4 days. on that night. And we were all, like, all four of us were on stage with Skinny Lister, and then all four of us kind of, like, dived off the stage one after the other and crowd surfed all the way to the back. And it was one of those moments where I just felt kind of peak happiness where I was kind of looking back and I could see our drummer kind of going off into the distance, and looking forward and I could see our bass player and our guitarist kind of coming this way. And it's great. I think that's what music's about, really. It's about human connection. And I don't think there's any real, in the kind of music we do, it's very unhelpful to have kind of any ego or anything like that. I think the kind of age of the rock star is kind of dead, really. Especially, I mean, it's never really been there in punk music anyway, but I think now, like, there's nowhere near enough money for people to be kind of like rock stars, like, or be like how like Oasis were or something like that anymore, or Motley Crue or something. And the way that kind of social media is now as well, there's so many boundaries that have been broken down between kind of performer and audience. So like performers aren't like kind of David Bowie or something, or someone where it feels like the performer exists in a different kind of space now. I think there's some kind of pop stars that still that kind of, that maybe they still do have it, maybe someone like Lady Gaga or something like that, but in rock music, and I think it's a really positive thing. It seems like those barriers have been torn down and audience and performer are all exactly the same. And it's really nice to see kind of like Skinny Lister watching our set, and then like kind of like we're partying to their set and stuff. And like, it seems like everyone in the room, everyone's equal. There's no kind of egos about or anything. That's when everyone has the best time, you know?
It's really grassroots at this point, because it can only survive that way. And it's cool because you see people go into like the pop, into the main, like the crazy level, the stratosphere, I guess. And they often lose touch with what their initial like sense of artistry was. Maybe it evolves. Maybe I'm just not a fan of it anymore, of course, but it often seems like it gets a little ruined through that rise. So this scene is special, even if it's not as glamorous as it once maybe was. I fully agree with that. Good point. Very meta.
Yeah, it sounds interesting, because in a sense, it's almost like you're trying to cultivate a parasocial relationship, but then not have it be parasocial, have it be an actual connection based on empathy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or based 100%. On both ways, yeah.
And I think that's what we've got. I think that something that's been really kind of really helped that weirdly is the fact that we lost a tour right at the start of the year. So we kind of left our job so that we could go on tour with Frank Turner around the UK. And then we lost that tour because of COVID. It's been rescheduled. We're doing it like in September now, I think it is. But we were suddenly there, and our bass player and our drummer could go back to work, but me and my brother couldn't. So we were sitting there with we thought we were going to leave work to become professional musicians, and we left work to become unemployed. And it was kind of our friends and our kind of fans as well that pulled together and goes, look, this tour's not happening, but we're going to book a tour for you. And we started playing kind of in living rooms and in like garages and stuff like that. And we kind of built, and it helped us, one, pay the rent, but then it also helped us start kind of getting used to touring and stuff. But it was so DIY. And this group of people, they called themselves, because our album's called Fractured Party Music, they call themselves like Fractured Party People, and have taken it upon themselves to kind of build the band kind of with us as well. So it suddenly feels like it's not just four people. It's something like that's just kind of like grown and grown with more and more people kind of getting behind it and taking responsibility to grow it as well. So there's people that kind of make like DIY merch, or people have like, they're kind of creating little street teams where every venue that we play, there's pretty much, there's Petney stickers all over the place before we've even arrived in the city, which is really cool. And I love
that. That's awesome. That
It's so cool. Honestly, if you go on Facebook, it's called Fractured Party People. Like, join it after this conversation. And if anyone that is listening that wants to join it as well, you'll just see how kind of passionate this group of people are. And I think what I'm really looking forward to is we're doing 2 months in America, playing like really huge rooms. And then straight afterwards, we've got a month off before we do the UK tour. And we're doing house shows again. So as soon as we come back, we're doing house shows. We're going to be playing kind of like to maybe like 30, 40, 50 people, kind of like rammed into houses again. and just bring our own PA system and stuff and just do something that's really DIY and really punk and really grassroots to kind of counterbalance, you know? So yeah, it's going to be fun.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So with the DIY approach, you had the whole European tour, not just the German tour. You said beforehand, did you also go by van then and just drive it the whole way? Or like, if you're doing this yourself, that's crazy. That's pretty old school though. If you're like talking about how bands came up way back when, also in like all the US bands, they talk about it. You get in a van and you travel, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's it. Henry Rollins wrote Get in the Van, didn't he? About kind of Black Flag touring and stuff. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, when we were touring with Frank, there were bigger rooms, and he kind of has a massive team around him. So we had people that were kind of helping out kind of when we got there. His tour manager was helping us, kind of like we were kind of learning the ropes from her. But essentially, yeah, we were just a tour managing ourselves, driving ourselves. I found out which cities are harder to drive in than other cities. Driving around Paris in the middle of the night in a big van is terrifying. I felt like in Need for Speed or something like that. So like, yeah, driving around Paris at night is hard. Parking in Milan is very hard. Actually, we had to park outside the venue, and we haven't got a, like, we've just got a Mercedes Sprinter kind of splitter van. But the space that we had to get into was so small that our bass player, Rich, had to lean against the lamppost and pull the lamppost back so that we could kind of parallel park in. Which was terrifying, because if he let go of that, if his hand slipped, it would just smash through the van. But if we weren't driving ourselves, and if we weren't, again, like kind of like doing our own merch and stuff like that, we wouldn't have these kind of stories at all. And that's what it's about. You want to live it, and otherwise it can very easily all kind of roll into one, because especially if you've got a driver and you're sleeping on the van, you're just waking up at the next venue and suddenly life becomes a series of car parks and dark rooms, and that's it. And like, if you're kind of taking control and you're, and especially as well, actually, we got to stay at people's houses that we'd met when we were away, when we're in Germany, which is really cool. And you get to learn about people's lives, which is amazing. Like we stayed when we were in Berlin, we stayed at someone's house, and there was a couple of lads there that were like, they were studying classical music at this really prestigious kind of Berlin like university. And they were both classical piano players. And we just sat up right into the middle of the night kind of talking about music from two completely different perspectives, because none of us can read music at all. But then they were like, but the stuff you do is really refreshing and kind of passionate, because what we do is we get sheet music out and we do everything to the letter. Whereas we were like, what you're doing is insane. It's amazing. How can you even play like that? It's incredible. And so it's, yeah, kind of being on the road is all about kind of the people you meet and doing it DIY. And what's cool as well is that when we shoot out to America at the weekends, we've got people pretty much at every single show that, already fans of the band, but because like we've never been out there, I reckon a couple of hundred people might know who we are, maybe a bit more. But if they've gotten contact, I'm going to recognize them, because yeah, it's not as if we don't have kind of like thousands upon thousands of people getting in contact going, oh, I'm coming to this American show. So like there's a guy called Colin, actually, that's going to be one of the first shows. It's like, right, I'm coming to this show. I can't wait for it. It's like, brilliant. I'm going to keep an eye out for him. I can't wait to meet him. A little bit like, was this Berlin? Yeah. Yes, it was a Berlin show. There was a lady called Kristen that had got in contact ages ago. And her daughter was a big fan of the band. And it was really nice to meet her daughter and actually kind of like hang out with her. Which is one of the coolest things about European shows that doesn't happen in the UK, is it seems to be all ages, or it seems to like kids are allowed to come to them, which I think is amazing. That's so inclusive. Like in the UK, it's usually if you're with an adult and you're over 14, you can go. But if not, it's like most shows are over 18.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. like not festivals as much, but indoor like club shows. So when I first saw like people were emailing us going, oh, I'm going to come to this show with my child, she can't wait. I'm like, are you? Are you sure? can you really come with a child? And it's really cool. They come kind of ear protectors on and stuff. And I think that's awesome. I think that's awesome that it just feels all really inclusive, you know?
I think that is the only requirement in Germany for kids. They have to always have ear protection on at concerts. Mm-hmm. I think that's like the law recommendation or something. That is cool though. I mean, that's the most inspiring reason to go on tour, to just meet people that like your music and they're good people, you hang out with them. That's awesome. In terms of the rooms you were talking about having played and going from big to small, I take from what you said that the States will probably be the biggest rooms you will have played. What's your background? Like what's the biggest show you've played till date?
So I think the biggest ones, we did Manchester Apollo, which is 3,500, which is like nuts. And then we did a couple of the ones in the Netherlands were quite big, but only kind of maybe 2,000, well, only about like 2,000 capacity or something. We played the Roundhouse in Camden, which is I think about 3,000 cap. But the biggest ones that we're doing over in the States is when we do the shows with NoFX, and they're kind of 6,000 capacity rooms, which would be great, which would be really cool. But then it's interesting because it seems that the bigger the stages are, or like the bigger the room is, the further away you are from people as well. So the first one, the Manchester Apollo, when we did that, 3,500 people, you walk on and you're kind of like, oh my God, because it's like a sea of people. And I think the thing that no one prepares you for is, especially if you're speaking and if it's going well and people are listening, like everybody's looking at you. So you're not just, it's not just a massive 3,500 people. It's 3,500 people all giving you eye contact at the same time. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, it's very strange. It feels a little bit more like there's a bit more of a distance between like audience and performer though. It feels like you're almost like doing the performance for the audience, who are kind of like quite far away and stuff. Obviously we try and get down on the barrier and try and make that gap as small as possible and stuff. But I think weirdly my favorite kind of rooms are the kind of 500 cap rooms, where like a bit like the rooms that we were playing with Skinny actually. Because it just feels like the energy is just completely contained in the room, and it's kind of the rooms that we're used to playing in as well, and I love those kind of rooms. I think that's kind of my favorite size to play at the moment. But then it is always mind-blowing when you walk out and there's thousands and thousands of people there. It's completely different feeling, but great, man.
I completely love both, to be honest. As an audience member, I love both, because the like club or pub scene is amazing, because like you kind of know everybody after a half hour, and that's really cool because you just party more and it's more intimate in a way. But then again, at like huge shows, you also meet a bunch of really cool people, and you can like, if it's like, I don't know, I like moshing, who doesn't? The bigger mosh pit, the better, and some would say.
Sure.
So those are also really nice events. I do have a challenge for you on your US tour. So this is something we saw live, I think, 3 years ago, Hurricane, the last one before lockdown, Royal Republic. Mm. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they played there. Royal Republic is a really cool band, energetic, cool, from Sweden. And they said they were going to try and break the world record for amount of mosh pits at one show. Because they didn't have enough audience members to have the biggest ever, they said, okay, let's try and make as many as possible. And they made small groups, I think, of, I don't know how many people it was, but they basically, you know, worked with them, and then everybody moshed together. I thought it was pretty fun. So
that's so cool.
That's a cool opportunity for a big arena then, or in general, I think any show, but that would be cool to see.
That's cool. So what, did they just get like groups of,
I think it was my girlfriend Toby and I, and we just moshed in the circle. It was good fun.
That's so cool. That's such a good
idea.
And
it looked cool. It looked cool as well.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing. Oh, what a good idea. And I think that's something that is really important as well, I think, is kind of showmanship and kind of things that you're saying between the songs and being able to control an audience in that way. It's something that's kind of overlooked sometimes as kind of like part of the kind of like art or skill or craft or whatever of being in a band. But to me, that's equally as important in like kind of like getting people on side and things. That's one thing as I think Frank Turner especially is really, really good at, is being able to kind of make a show feel so inclusive in that way. And one thing that I think's really important, especially if you're playing, say you're kind of like, you're playing a big space, but you're not playing to the most amount of people, or even if you're playing a little pub and you're not playing to very many people, is having people know that you're really comfortable in that space and you're really comfortable playing in that space. And I like, because the worst thing I think is if people kind of, if they go on stage and go, oh, there isn't very many people here or something, or they seem like kind of disappointed. But I love that idea of kind of getting people to say, right, there's not enough people for a massive mosh pit, but we're going to do the most amount of mosh pits. I think mm-hmm. that is so good because it shows that kind of like awareness that they're not pretending that they're playing like sold out Wembley Stadium. They're kind of like acknowledging the fact that there's people there that want to see them, but it's not packed out, but then they're turned into something that's really fun and really inclusive. I think that's really cool.
It's the not taking yourself too seriously part, and
that's it.
The humorous aspect. It's a good one. It's a good one.
So good. Yeah, really good.
Awesome. That's all the points that I had written down and improvised. Toby, I don't know
exactly.
If you have a follow-up.
I've been keeping an eye on the time. Johnny, you mentioned you had roughly an hour. Not to kick you out, I'd be happy to continue, but just as a reminder.
Yeah, cool.
Well,
that's fine.
We'll close it down then. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been super insightful, super fun. It's been awesome getting to know you. And also the history, the future of Pet Needs, and I'm sure we'll see you on the road very soon, whenever you're back near us, or we'll see if we can organize something in Maastricht to happen as a concert, because that's a city in the Netherlands.
That'd be really fun,
studied,
actually, yeah.
So who knows, maybe we can work on something like that, and thank you so much for joining us, we really enjoyed this.
Oh, lads, it's been so much fun, really good to catch up, and we'll see you next time. We should be coming back to Germany, really soon. Well, definitely once, hopefully twice this year. Oh, which would be cool. So hopefully see you then.
That's very awesome. Good news. Awesome. Pet Needs new album drops in September. Make sure to get that on the record.
Title almost decided, I guess.
Title almost decided. Have a wonderful week, everybody. And thank you so much for tuning in.
All right.
Bye.